Hello, and welcome to the podcast for Christ Community Church in Oak Ridge, Tennessee. This is the message given on Sunday, October 11, 2015, by Tom Job from 2 Timothy chapter 2.
Probably be dead. He was in a dungeon. And this is the most important things. These are the most important things that I want you to know. And some things he just kind of throws them down there like, I expect you to understand this. And it could be that the sun was going down and there was like, he just had like 7 more minutes of light. So I'm just going to write stuff down. And I know you know what I mean. But this is the most important stuff that a person who wants to have a life that matters could possibly know. And he said in verse 20 of chapter 2, in a large house, there are vessels, not only of gold and silver, but also of wood and clay. Some are for noble purposes, and some are for ignoble purposes. And I mean, you know, He's basically saying, like, in a person's house, there's, like, a soup pot and there's a chamber pot. I mean, do you know what they are? And it's just kind of like, you know, there's different kind of pots. And some of them, it would be awesome to be one of them. And others, they're very important. But it wouldn't be awesome to be one. So, and if a man cleanses himself from the latter, he will be a vessel of noble purposes, made holy, useful to the master, prepared for any good work. Lord, I do ask you to help us to understand this. And I don't know. I've probably never felt in a long, long time that I had something this important to share. I've probably not been this nervous in a long, long time. I've probably not been afraid of the potential to make this confusing, even though it could be the most important thing ever. So in all of that, I'm here, and I need you to help me, because I'm kind of afraid. Whew. I don't want to make a mess of this. It's your holy word. In Jesus' name. Amen. So I was reading this article in the Smithsonian magazine about Louis XIII, and he married this Austrian woman, and in Austria they drank hot chocolate, and in France they didn't know anything about it, but he wanted to make it a big deal because he really thought she was awesome. So they invented these things called chocolate pots that were for making hot chocolate, and you can buy them like on antique websites for like $17,000, like from the days of Louis XIII. And about 17 years before that, an English guy invented, the chocolate thing is called a chocolate bowl. And 17 years before that, a British guy invented the toilet bowl for Queen Elizabeth I, of course. And so she was the first person who ever had a flushing toilet bowl. And it took 7.5 gallons to flush it. And they didn't really get popular until, like, a guy in the late 1700s named Alex Cummings, he invented the S curve in the tube, which helped a lot in a lot of ways in how people's houses smell and stuff like that. And then a guy named he invented the thing. He was the guy that produced the first commercial line of toilets in the 1880s in England. And he invented the little ball thing that could fill up the tank. And U.S. soldiers in World War I named toilet after him, and his name was Thomas Crapper. And it just was. I mean, that is the whole truth of it. And it's kind of like the way you could tell a chocolate bowl from a toilet bowl is a chocolate bowl had a hole in the top because they would stick a stick in it and swirl it around. And a toilet bowl has a hole in the bottom. So that's how you could tell them apart. Although someone that Patsy and I know and love one time sent a message of encouragement to him anonymously, and it was a toilet that they had found somewhere, and he put it on Patsy's porch. And he lifted the lid, and it had a goo-goo cluster inside and a note that said, "There's nobody like Potts." So it's kind of this thing that I saw on, there's a sugar bowl that you could get on eBay that belonged to Paul Revere, made of silver, and it was $17,000. And so Paul's kind of like saying in this thing, you know what? If you want God to use you, you need to remember that in an important person's house, there's all kinds of bowls. There's the toilet bowl, and there's the sugar bowl. And you can be a sugar bowl if you want to be. And it's just about how would God use you. I've been reading this book about a biography of a guy who has become... I have a lot of pastors. The two guys I work with are my pastors, and all of the elders of our church are my pastors. And they're my living pastors, but I have dead pastors, people that have been dead a long time and wrote books. And this guy's becoming my favorite. And his name was John Newton. And he was the most horrible person in the history of the world. I mean, he was like a monster when he was in his 20s. He was a British sailor, and he sailed to Africa, and he got involved in the African slave trade, and he became the director of what they called a factory. And a factory, it wasn't a factory, it was a dungeon where they would take Africans who had been captured, torn from their families, and just, you know, stripped, branded, beaten, chained, and kept there until they had enough to fill the bottom of a ship, where they would be stuffed and just branded and chained in the bottom of a ship, where a third of them would die on their way to the British West Indies, where the ones who didn't die would be worked until they were dead. And that's what he did. Until his dad... And he just, that was his life. He was a blasphemer and a rapist, and he was getting deeply involved in witchcraft. And his dad wanted him to come home, so he sent a guy with a ship and told him that an uncle had died and left him $2 million, and he had to come home and claim it. And it was a complete lie, but he got in that ship. And then on March the 21st, 1748, they were in a storm off the coast of Newfoundland, and a gigantic hole was torn in the hull of this ship, and it was going to go down. And that storm lasted for like 18 days, and they just thought they were going to be dead. And on the 21st of March, 1748, he cried out to Jesus and said, "If you don't have mercy on me, I have no hope." It was the first, he celebrated that day for the rest of his life, the first day that he ever opened his heart to the mercy of Jesus. And he became the sweetest pastor and the sweetest person and the most ferocious warrior in the fight to abolish the British slave trade. He just became amazing. But it's like his life was the quest to answer three questions. Could God save me? And he found out he could. And then he had the question, could God love me? And he found out he could. And then he had the question, could God use me? And, you know, that is, I guess Abraham Maslow, the psychologist, said to be used. Like, it's one of the most important needs of the human heart. Every human heart needs to know that it is infinitely loved, and that it has worth as a person, and that that life has a purpose. The you know, I need to know that I've got a purpose in my life. And for a person who loves Jesus, it would be, could God use me? How does God want to use me? And if you never think about that, like if you don't ever think about it, and you haven't thought about it, and you don't plan on thinking about it, I just think that you should feel completely free to go ahead and pull your phone out and just text people and play video games, because this is going to be super boring to you, because this is all, I got nothing for you. This is just for people who care about that. But for a person who does care about being used by God, I have good news and I have bad news. And the good news is God will use you. And the bad news is it might not really be in the way that you think. It just kind of depends on you. Like if I'm an idiot my whole life and I'm just a complete idiot, God will use me. But it'll be that thing of, don't be like this idiot. You know, it's kind of like that Eli Manning thing where it's just like, I'm Eli Manning. And I'm terrible comedian Eli Manning. What? Don't be this me. You know, it's just like that would be. It's kind of like Job's friends in the book of Job, that he was in great suffering. He had these friends. They came to visit him. They said a ton of stupid stuff. And it was all written down, and God has used them for centuries. For people who, if you're going to see someone who's having a hard time, don't say this stuff because it's super stupid. But if you want to be a sugar bowl and not be a toilet bowl, you can be. It doesn't necessarily mean that God's going to use you like in a famous way or a humongous way. I mean, John Newton, he became a pastor eventually. He became ordained in the Church of England, and he became a pastor of this sweet church in this village, this little village of Olney, where the people were super poor, and he loved them, and he took care of them. And he started to write hymns for kids and hymns for his church, because they didn't have a bunch that they understood the words to them. And he started writing hymns because he had a friend who was one of the greatest poets in England at the time, who was super depressed, and he came and lived in Olney, and they would write hymns together to keep this friend encouraged. And they wrote a bunch of hymns. They put them in the in a hymnal called the Olney Hymns. And one of them he wrote in 1773 on January the 1st, and it was called, it's Olney Hymn number 41. And it's called Faith's Review and Expectation. And it goes, "Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. I once was lost, and now I found. Was blind, but now I see." It didn't really work. His friend that night became so discouraged that he tried to kill himself. And he never went to church again for 10 years until he died. And John Newton never knew. That hymn just was not famous anywhere. Nobody ever sang it. It just, he died and didn't know if anybody sang it. But a guy put it in a hymnal that he used, that was used in America, called the Southern Harmony. And it was sung all over the United States. That particular one, particularly among African American slaves. They loved it. But anyway, if I understand this thing at all, like Paul saying, you know, in every house there's a toilet bowl, that's important, but there's also a sugar bowl. And if you want to be a sugar bowl, what goes in the toilet bowl can't go in the sugar bowl. In other words, you have to purify yourself. I was going to go, because if you're going to use things in certain ways, it needs to be clean. They have to be clean. I went one day to swim laps in a local swimming pool in town. And I got ready to dive in, and I saw something. And I didn't dive in. And I changed my clothes and I went to the front desk and said, you need to close this pool. And she said, why? And I said, it's for one of two reasons. And it's number two. And so, you know, but... So it's like Paul is saying, if you purify yourself, you'll be a sugar bowl. You have to be clean. And you have to clean things out of your life. And I know that people say, whoa, just a minute. I mean, are you saying we're not all forgiven? I'm not saying that. Like, we're all, everybody who's believed in Jesus is completely forgiven of everything we've ever done, do, or will do the rest of our life. God has, and one thing that you can know when you mess up, which we do every day, is that when you mess up and surprise yourself, God was not surprised by that, and he's not disappointed in you. He knew, because, you know, if you're disappointed in someone, it's because you expected something other than what you got. He knew that was coming. He knows every mess up you don't even know you're going to make. When he decided before you were born to make you his own, he knows, he has already forgiven you and forgotten things that you don't even know you're going to do. So there you go. That I remember one girl, this was in Italy. She was an American girl from Texas and trying to understand what it means to believe in Jesus. And I told her that when Jesus died, he paid for all, everything. And if she trusted in him, he would forgive her for everything she's ever done, do, or will do in her life. And she said, I thought that when Jesus died for me, he paid for all the stuff that I did up to the point when I believed in him. And then after that, I'm kind of on my own. And I said, when Jesus died for you and for all your mess ups, how many of your sins were in the future to him when he did it? And she said, all of them. I was like, there you go. So he's not saying that we're not forgiven for everything. And some people say, well, we're all sinners, like, and we're all going to be sinners like this whole time till we're dead, right? It's like, yeah, that's true. It's not, he's not saying that when he says you have to like purify yourself if you want God to use you in a better way. It's not saying that we're not all sinners and we all sin like, you know, every day. And it's like, and also people say, all sin's the same, right? I mean, like, it's all the same. Well, sort of. Mostly. In some ways. In some ways, it's not. Like, what we call sin is, I mean, I like to think of it, it helps me to think about it this way. You know, like, theologically, when you're talking about what is a sin, it's meeting a need that God has created us with, that the plan was that we would trust in him to meet that need, but not trusting him, we meet a God-given need in a time or in a way that he doesn't want. So you think gossip and taking drugs, they're the same thing, right? Well, sort of. They're all meeting, like if I gossip, I have a need to feel worth. I'm not going to trust God, so I'm going to have to talk about people. And drugs, I have a need for peace in my heart. I'm not going to trust God for it, so I have to do that. So in some ways, they're the same. But taking certain drugs is worse on your teeth. So they're not the same. Like people say murder and anger, they're the same. Well, I guess you would say they're the same. But not to the other guy. He would much rather you tell him off than knock him off. There was a guy that we got, one day we got talking in my class out there at the Morgan County Prison, and they never talk, they usually don't talk about stuff that they do, but this day they did, and this guy said, you know, I accepted Jesus when I was 13, and then when I was 18, I did something I never thought I'd do. Me and some friends, we killed a guy. He had been in there for 25 years. He said, we killed a guy. And that will really mess up with your assurance of your salvation. And I was like, yeah, you think? But I said, I'd be more worried about the assurance of the other guy, that he would know that he was going to heaven before you killed him. But I also think that with all of that, you know, as a given, that Paul, it's like, We're forgiven of everything we've ever done to or will do. We're all going to be sinners until we go to heaven. And all sin is the same. But if you want God to use you, there's some stuff you just can't do. It's just kind of like, we're all sinners, and all sin is the same. But come on, man, you can't do that. You know, like, one thing about John Newton is after he became a pastor, he just became such a beautiful person. And the idea that he was ever involved in the slave trade was something that he said, when I think about that, that I was involved in that, in something so horrible, it makes me shudder to think about it. But after he accepted Jesus and he began to grow, they actually promoted him, and he became the captain of a slave ship. And he didn't even think about it. And he said that he would sit on the deck and he would read his Bible and have glorious fellowship with Jesus. And how awesome it was to know the Lord and to be in fellowship with his children. He was on the deck of a slave ship. It's like, come on, man, you can't do that. I mean, all sin is the same, and we're all sinners. But you can't do that and think that God is going to use you in some way. And he got to a point where he realized, yeah, I can't do that. I mean, sin is all the same, whatever. But if I want God to use me, I can't do that. There's And sometimes people will say, well, I can't be perfect. Nobody's asking you to be perfect. You just can't do that. I'm only human. Nobody's asking you to be a goose. I mean, you're going to be a human till the whole time. But you can't do that. There's some things you just can't do and expect God to use you. Something happened it was Monday. There's a guy that was a starting pitcher for the New York Yankees, a guy named C.C. Sabathia. And he was becoming an ace like the old days. I mean, he had a rough start this year, but his ERA was down around 2. And they were getting ready to go into the wild card game to get into the playoffs on Tuesday. And Monday, he checked himself into alcohol rehab. And he's like, I know this is important. And my teammates are my brothers, but I cannot drink another day. It is killing me. And so, I just can't do that anymore. And I think that, like Paul is saying, that if I want God to use me, I don't think it's like God can't use you if you do certain sins or whatever. But I just think that if I do have certain things in my life, I won't be used. Because it's kind of like when I used to smoke. And I tried to smoke. It's actually easy to quit smoking. I did it about 1,500 times. But when I really decided that it was time for me to quit smoking, I started jogging. Because I knew in my heart, I would have to choose between these. You just can't do both of them. And I quit smoking. And I still jog after 35 years. And I think it's because I'm afraid of smoking again. And I think it's kind of like that. That there are some things that if I want to be a sugar bowl, it can't be in there. I think, for example, of anger. if I want God to use me, and he says a million times, get rid of your anger, get rid of your bitterness, get rid of your rage. People who love Jesus should be kind and tender-hearted. What about righteous anger? Everybody always says that. Good luck with that. I mean, it's like, whatever, but righteous anger. And that was one thing. And people say, well, what about Wilberforce, who fought against the slave trade, and Newton? One thing about them is they were very, very assiduous in their campaign, but they were not angry because they knew we're all in this and we're all guilty of this. But there are a lot of angry people. I know angry missionaries, bitter. There are a lot. I was reading about this one guy. He was a pastor of a church of 13 people, and it grew to 1,000. And in 1909, he was asked to be the pastor of First Baptist Church of Fort Worth. And he was about the angriest person I've ever heard of. He was angry at the Darwinists, and he was bringing monkeys up into the pulpit just to make fun of them. And he was angry at the city government of Fort Worth, and he preached a sermon called The 10 Biggest Devils in Fort Worth, names given. And, good gal, He preached a sermon against other Baptists, little modernistic, lick the skillet, 2x4, aping asinine preachers. And I was like, wow. He preached a sermon in 1926 called Rum and Romanism, attacking the mayor of Fort Worth, who was Roman Catholic, who he thought had a drinking problem, and he also accused him of misappropriating funds that were donated to Catholic causes. And a friend of the mayor came to his office to talk about it, and they closed the door, and the discussion got heated, and this J. Frank Norris, this pastor, pulled a gun out of his desk, shot the guy 4 times, and he killed him. And it's like, wow. I mean, and he went on trial, and he was exonerated because they said it was self-defense or whatever, but the Atlanta Constitution wrote an article that said the Reverend J. Frank Norris is one good, sound reason why there are 50 million Americans who do not belong to any church at all. And the reason that God can't use angry people is because when I'm angry, I'm saying, I don't deserve this. I deserve better. We deserve better. This is unfair. And the message that I share is, I don't deserve anything. I am no better than anyone. And the greatest unfairness in all of the universe was when the Almighty God was punished for all of the sins that I have done, so that I'm not punished for any of them. And I am nothing but thankful for his unfairness in taking my sins from me. And thankfulness is about the only emotion that I have the right to. And thankfulness is the power and the energy behind everything I do. And if I'm serving Jesus and somebody misunderstands me, or I'm a disappointment to someone, I just think, if you really understood me, you'd think a lot worse of me than you do. But Jesus loved me and he's washed me, and I'm nothing but thankful. But when I'm angry, Jesus said it's not the stuff that goes in your mouth, but it's the stuff that comes out of it that pollutes you. And if I say angry stuff about, you know, anything, what I'm really saying in my anger is, I deserve better. We deserve better because we are better. And this is unfair. And if I say that enough, Jesus said, it will pollute my faith. And it will corrupt my thankfulness. And I will run out of energy for serving my master. I can't be used of God. I can't be a sugar bowl and be angry. You know, I thought about another thing that this is true. It's just, I can't be used of God, and I can't be a sugar bowl if I have stuff like on the internet, that I'm looking at messed up stuff on the internet all the time. And it's so true of a lot of people, you know, just a lot of pastors and people in ministry. I can't do that. And the reason that I can't is because The purpose behind everything I do in ministry is to please the invisible God. I don't see him, but he sees me. And I'm trying to encourage people to trust in the invisible God that they can't see, but he sees them and loves them. And when I'm by myself, if I have something in my life that tells my heart to forget the fact that he sees me and that he's watching me, and in that moment I don't believe it, I'll lose my purpose. I just can't do both of those. So what am I supposed to do if I want to be a sugar bowl? That completely depends on you. All you have to do, if you have something you want to be used by God, but you know there's something in your life that isn't good, all you have to do is be honest and weak. You have to admit it to God, and you have to admit it to somebody that you trust. And be honest about it. And you have to ask them to help you. If your marriage is a mess, you have to be honest and admit it. And you have to be weak and ask God and someone else to help you. And if you will admit it, and if you will ask for help, and if you will be honest, and if you will be weak, God can use the honest and weak. You know who he doesn't use? He doesn't use people who are strong and self-confident and dishonest. Haven't those people done enough damage? That is the resume of Satan: self-confident and dishonest. But if a man or a woman will be honest and weak and admit stuff to God and to someone who can help them and ask for help to God and someone who can help them, God can use. God will make a sugar bowl out of him or her. And you think, how is that possible? Why don't you try it? Why don't you find someone that you trust and admit something that you're struggling with to them, and ask them to help you? The people that you will find that will help you will not brag about how awesome they are and about how much they have it together. You will find that they will be honest with you, and you will find that they are weak like you. The people who will help you will be people like you who have learned to be and to love admitting stuff and asking for help. People who are honest and weak. And what they will tell you about is about someone who is strong, who is stronger than self, who is stronger than sin, who is stronger than Satan. And they will tell you how much he loves them. And they will tell you how much he loves you. And they will tell you how much they love him. And they will tell you how much he has helped them, and how much he helps them, and how much he will help you. And they will tell you about how sweet he is. And you will say, I just found the sugar bowl. You know, that was a thing about John Newton. He wrote letters. The letters he wrote to people are so amazing, because he talks so openly about what a mess he was and what a mess he is. He said to someone, if a stranger were to judge me by what I sometimes say in the pulpit, they would think that like the angels, I had but two things in view: the will of God and to behold his face. What a joke. He said, if they knew me, what a double person I am. It is no wonder if you know not what to make of me. I don't know what to make of myself. I would and I would not. I do and I do not. I can and I cannot. I find the hardest thing easy and the easiest thing impossible. But then he wrote to someone else. We are always glad to hear from you because your letters are perfumed with the name of Jesus. You speak well of him, and you have reason, for he has been a good friend to you. I likewise am enabled to speak something of him, and I trust that the chief reason why I would wish my life to be prolonged is that I may employ more of my breath to tell of his wonderful praise. I could tell a stranger something about Jesus that would perhaps astonish him. Such a glorious person, such wonderful love, such humiliation, such a death. What he is now in himself and what he is to his people. What a son, what a shield, what a life, what a friend. My tongue can run on these subjects sometimes, and could my heart keep pace with it, I would be the happiest fellow in this entire country. He was a sugar bowl, and you could be one too. All you have to do, if you got something going on that isn't good, all you have to do is admit it to God. Find a friend, admit it to them, and ask God and ask someone to help you.
To find out more about Christ Community Church in Oak Ridge, visit our website at c3oakridge.org. Again, that's c3oakridge.org.